Okay, so hey buddies.
Hey buddies.
Hey buddies.
Welcome to another Comics Clap Trap Zoom edition. I'm glad to see your guys' faces again. We're excited tonight because, and I think the guys are super excited too because you get to talk about superhero comics. I like superhero comics. I actually do like superhero comics. I don't know much about issues and certain things, but I'm excited to be educated on Jack Kirby because our guest tonight is Tom Scioli, who is an Eisner-nominated cartoonist. He's based in my hometown, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's done some amazing comic book series, like, remember American Barbarian? You guys remember that? And he's done the Fantastic Four Grand Design. So, you know, there's no question that Tom has a strong enthusiasm for the topic of his latest book, which is a biography of Jack Kirby, who's just, you know, the legendary comic artist, co-creator of Marvel, DC superheroes, Captain America, Iron Man, you guys, your favorite heroes. So his latest book is Jack Kirby, The Epic Life of the King of Comics. So we're excited. So welcome to the program, Tom Scioli.
I thought
that was amazing. There was a little fade in there. That's, I thought, amazing. did you see that transition? There was a little fade in.
He also gave us a little delay, which was even,
oh, like, is that what that was?
Even more mouth watering, and then he appeared and it was like, whoa.
It was an internet disconnection.
Very dramatic.
Yeah, but we're super excited to have you on the show, and this is kind of a different thing for us because we hardly talk about superhero comics, although outside of the show those guys Tin and Josh talk about it a lot. They're collectors, they like know the history.
But we're not talking about superhero comics really, we're talking about a biography of a cartoonist,
right? But I'm seeing the enthusiasm for, you know, a legend in Marvel.
That is being
talked about in this book, and so like I feel like the enthusiasm of that the whole world.
Okay.
Go forth, you guys.
Well, you know, that's why I think Tom is like, out of all the cartoonists that we've kind of known or seen around in the shows, like, I'm more jealous of Tom than anybody. You know, because
why?
Because he's able to do these superhero stuff or like kind of mainstreamy stuff that you always dream about doing when you were a kid, but in a like kind of indie fashion.
It makes it cool.
Describe Tom's art in any way that is just like mainstream DC Marvel at all. You know what I mean? But you're able to do the stuff that like everybody dreams of doing your way, which is like something that I think a lot of us indie guys or like a lot of us alternative comics people get to do. So I'm excited to talk to you about that aspect of your comic stuff.
Yeah, I mean that was kind of like the hard way into like mainstream comics is like the way I went. Like
it took
a long time, and like, you know, I wouldn't recommend it as like, you know, have to go. If that's like your aspiration, this isn't the way to do it. You know,
I'm sorry to already hijack the conversation so fast. Could you tell us a little bit about how some of these projects came about? Like, when you came out with G.I. Joe's versus Transformers, I was livid. I was so mad because I want to do that. That is my project. You know, that's the front. Like, if you're looking on my desk right here, there's all these Transformers and there's all these G.I. Joes. And like, all I ever wanted was, since I was a kid, was to do, you know, G.I. Joes, Transformers, Robotech, all that stuff. And so when it came out, I was like, I hate him. And how did he get this? Like, how did you go from something like Godman to get to do something like Transformers versus G.I. Joe and stuff like that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it kind of works like that. Like, whatever your favorite thing is, like, you're not going to get hired to do your favorite thing. It's always going to be like somebody who doesn't care about it as much as you do. That's the person who's going to get that job. You know? It's just the way it works. I mean, for that particular thing, like, I had spent like my whole career doing, you know, like doing my own thing and doing, you know, self-published or small press or, you know, like those kind of comics. And and just kind of hit like a little bit of like a brick wall with it. Like I felt like I you know, wasn't going where I wanted to go. So I just kind of thought like, okay, like how does somebody like break into comics or whatever? Like, what is that? How do you do that? And I thought like, what are the rules? Like, how do you do? And so I just, you know, just started like putting feelers out to like every company, just like, you know, going down the of like, I want somebody to offer me money to make comics. Like that's it. I want that. That's what I wanted. So I just kind of put it out there to every and like followed their submission guidelines and stuff. And some companies, you know, don't take submissions or didn't take submissions at that point. And I just followed like, and for IDW, it was like, if you want to work for IDW, here's where you send your samples. And so I sent my samples to that. And then John Barber, who's like the editor of like the, he was at the time was like the editor of like the Transformers stuff. And now he's, I think, editor in chief. You know, he just happened to be looking through that stuff. And he said like, that wasn't something he did very often. It was just kind of as time permitted, he would sort of look through that, whatever you call it, the slush pile. And then he saw my name and, you know, he was kind of excited about that. Like he knew me and knew my work and was really, you know, happy that I was like, you know, offering my services to IDW. And so we started talking and, you know, he gave me some like cover assignments on various things. And then in pretty short order, he said he was like in the tub or something. And like the idea just came to him.
Wow.
Of like a Transformers and G.I. Joe crossover, where, like Cybertron is like that Cybertron's like New Genesis or like Apocalypse or like it was one of those, it was some Kirby reference
He made,
pictured it like in my style and stuff. And like asked me if I wanted to do that. And, you know, like you said, it's like, that's like a dream job. Like I would have never in a million years thought like, oh, let me try to audition for a Transformers and G.I. Joe. But it's something that like so perfectly played to my strengths. I like couldn't believe it. Like, and I really saw it as this like amazing opportunity because there aren't like very many, like in terms of like, you know, pop culture, you know, franchises or whatever you want to call them, there aren't too many like perfect matches, but that was like a perfect match that, you know, just made total sense, you know, once he said it.
Yeah, I would have paid, I think I would have paid them to do that.
That's so romantic too, how that happened. He was in the tub and had this inspiration and thought of you. I mean, wow. Do most of those things come about that way? I don't know. I don't think so.
I think like the real magical stuff.
Yeah.
That way, like you can't force it. You know, it kind of has to happen in like weird ways.
But were you a fan before you started doing it, right? Or were you just sort of?
I'm like the age where like I remember when all that stuff was new. Like I remember, you know, they're not being Transformers and then they're being Transformers. I remember seeing like the ads for the G.I. Joe cartoon and being intrigued and like wondering like who are these characters. So I'm part of that. I loved that stuff as a kid. I kind of like largely left it behind when I went to adulthood. Like I was really into it and then all those things got canceled. Like the cartoon, never followed the comics.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I did follow the cartoons and then they got canceled and then kind of like, you know, it wasn't really an interest. And then I kind of dipped into it like a little bit in adulthood of like I'd heard in retrospect, like how great the G.I. Joe comic was. Oh. So I started checking out little bits and pieces of it. And like, especially the silent issue, silent interlude, the Snake Eyes issue, like everybody was like, that's like comic you got to check out. So I checked that out and loved it. And then I tried a couple other G.I. Joe comics and didn't quite get into it as much as I got into that one. And then the Transformers stuff too, like Transformers kind of in like the early 2000s, I guess, like made this kind of comeback and like the comics, I wasn't like blown away by the stories at that point, but like just the look of it was amazing. Like it looked like they got the sort of Transformers 1986, you know, movie look and figured out a way to make, you know, a whole line of comics that look like that. So that was my connection to it. Like, So I had, you know, this like nostalgia and like a connection to it. And it was like a touchstone. Like for a period of my life, it was that sort of like, you know, the modern mythology, the thing they always talk about. Oh, you know, it was like the modern mythology. It was like you'd turn on the TV and there'd be some new installment of this like, you know, weird ongoing, you know, epic.
Yeah, I think that's interesting that like maybe the fact that you didn't read those comics a lot, you know, when you were a kid, maybe made those comics even better. You know, the ones that you did. Like when I read them, I was like, oh, it almost kind of felt like something new. It wasn't like a rehashing of the 80s stuff, which I love, but because it wasn't, it was something that I was interested in. You know, a lot of these reprints nowadays are just kind of rehashing of what was already done. So yeah, that's awesome. That's
so an awesome story. Tim, did you read the G.I. Joe comics before the TV show? Because I was a fan of the TV show, the cartoon. Like I saw like the movie, you know, like, and I loved the whole.
Yeah, I was the perfect customer. I was like the one that was like, oh, the TV show, I gotta get the toys, I gotta get the comics, I gotta get the cereal, I gotta get, you know, like I gotta get everything. And I don't think I appreciated G.I. Joe, the comics, as much as I do now. Like now when I have a lot of them, most of them, and now that I read them, I'm like, oh, these are brilliant. And like all the military stuff, it's like, this is great. But back then I was just like, where's Snake Eyes? I want to see Snake, you know, it's just like, but the nuances is not as there, you know? And I think that's why, like when I see new stuff, like Tom's take on it, I was like very taken aback and was very like blown away. I was really amazed by it. I loved it.
I hold those old G.I. Joe comics, like the Larry Hama stuff, like I hold it in the highest regard. And again, like I didn't really know that stuff before I started this project, but then I got caught up pretty quick, like, you know, read through all of it. And I'm a huge fan now. And I think it stands up to like, you know, the great, you know, comic book, you know, superhero kind of like, I think it stands up to, you know, the X-Men or whatever, and it's still going on. Like he's still making new issues and it's one continuous story.
Have you ever met Larry Hama?
No, I mean, just like via email or like Facebook Messenger or something. Like I've never met him in person. I've had a couple like things that where like I almost went to where like, you know, we would have, you know, been, you know, part of the same event or whatever, but yeah, no, it never happened. I'd like to. I mean, I you know, really like his work, and what I did, you know, in that comic was in a very large part like a tribute to his work. But I don't, you know, I think a lot of creators, especially like of that generation, are sort of maybe like a little uncomfortable with that kind, you know, or you know, don't quite know how to react to that kind of like adulation, you know, like. Like Larry seems like a pretty humble guy, and that generation, they seem like a pretty humble generation. And like, I know like the G.I. Joe work is like really important to him and really, really personal. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, but yeah.
Oh man, I thought it was a great connection, but we'll move on from that because I mean, I can sit here and talk to you about that forever. So,
I mean, I think it was a cool connection that you brought up though, how you were able to put the Kirby spin on that Transformers and G.I. Joe material where you were, you know, bringing in that kind of fourth world setup, like of the interactions of the different parties. I guess I kind of want to go back to the beginning though. I'm curious how you found your way to Jack Kirby, because I know for me at least, it was a little bit like, and I'm not an expert at all. Like, just let's make this clear. Like, I don't think any of the three of us are like super, you know, well read on that stuff. But
I totally am.
You know, I've tried, and like initially at first, you know, I would hear so much about like what, you know, Kirby's the King, but you know, it was hard to find good editions of the relevant material to read, and it was also, you know, hard to look at some of that stuff in a retrospect where like, so I've consumed so much art that was influenced by that original material. It's not quite the same as seeing it, you know, in its original state. So I don't know, I'm just curious how you got there, because I think you're kind of the same age as us pretty much. So
so it was like, you know, Kirby was not like, he was like the previous generation.
Yeah.
You know, he like, or he was, he belonged to the pre, like, he was, the people who were his fans were like a generation or two removed, mm-hmm. you know? So like, it, you know, when we were growing up, like, that Kirby wasn't like a hot name. Like, he was like a name from the past. And, you know, I was just kind of like, I guess, vaguely aware of him, you know, like in, you know, sort of like, you know, I don't know, seventh grade, eighth grade, you know, like high school. Like, I was like kind of vaguely aware. Like, I, you know, like, I had like How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I knew the name, I knew, you know, Stan Lee and John Buscema. And then, like, I think Kirby does get name checked there a little, like, knowing what I know now, there's like a ton of Kirby art in that book. And they are basically teaching you how to, like, think like Kirby and how to draw like Kirby in that book. But, like, it didn't, you know, I didn't know that then. And Kirby was, like, he was active in TV animation around the time that I was a consumer of TV animation. So I, you know, so Thundar the Barbarian.
Like, that was Kirby?
Yeah, that was Jack Kirby.
Oh,
yeah.
Geez. I love Alan Thundar.
Designed the three main characters, and then Jack Kirby designed, like, pretty much everything else, like all the villains and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it kind of burned that aesthetic into my head. Like, I really love that aesthetic. Like the you know, there's like a character called Gemini who had like these, like, you know, glowing eyes with all this like heavy, you know, makeup or whatever around his, whatever, you know, and he'd shoot lasers out of his eyes and stuff. Like, I love that aesthetic. And so as I got older, I'd find things that kind of, you know, rang that same bell, and it was Jack Kirby. I just didn't know the name. And so I'd read, like, you know, old Marvel reprints. And again, Jack Kirby's name would be right there, but all I'd see is Stan Lee, because Stan Lee was like a name that was familiar to me. He narrated, you know, the cartoon Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends and The Incredible Hulk. So I knew Stan Lee. And then, like, my brain just kind of, you know, blanked out, like, whatever other names were there. And then, yeah, like, I guess, like, when I got, and I heard Kirby's name as like an important guy. And I remember when he died, like, that was like a big deal. But again, I wasn't quite sure exactly who he was. Like, I knew he was in that sort of, like, John Buscema, John Romita. I knew he was kind of like in that world, but I didn't know that he was like the guy until, like, you know, freshman year of college. And then it was like, you know, Kirby had died. And so then you started having, it was kind of like, you know, Kirby tributes and so, like, I discovered, like, the Jack Kirby Collector magazine and the art of Jack Kirby, and just kind of, like, looking at that stuff, it all came together. I was like, oh, this is that guy, this is the Thundar guy, this is the Dark guy, like, all these like little bits and pieces came together.
So were you a comics fan before that time? Like, what were you looking at before, you know, when you were in seventh grade or whatever grade you were looking at Jack Kirby stuff?
I mean, I was a fan of, like, the old Marvel stuff. I just didn't have a ton of access to it. So I had, like, maybe two or three comics, you know, old Marvel comics, and they just happened to be Jack Kirby Marvel comics. But then it was, like, it was Frank Miller, you know, it was all the Batmans, like, Batmania was going on, like, with the Batman movie and stuff. So, you know, it was, so anything Batman, it was like the Frank Miller Batman stuff. And then like the current Batman of the time, which was like Jim Aparo and Denny O'Neill, I think, maybe was, you know, writing it. And
Neil Adams.
Yeah, Neil Adams. Like, so anything Batman. And then you had like Death in the Family, and you had all those, like, this was like era of really great Mike Mignola covers. Mm. And they, like, Mike Mignola right before Hellboy. And so he was it was like a perfect fit for Batman. So because it was kind of like this gothic imagery and like a picture of like, just like Robin's corpse on the cover of one of the books, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And then, and I was like starting to get into like what was like considered indie comics then, which would have been like Nexus and American Flag and, you know, like,
you're speaking our language.
I told you.
I love the chance to geek out like this, you know, because me and Josh, we have just recently discovered Kirby, you know, I have definitely recently. Like, I remember when I was a kid, you know, like, Kirby was always, like, too old for me. You know, I was, like, more like Image and, like, I want the gradient colors and stuff. And then when you looked at an old comic, you're like, well, this is just old, you know. But now when I look, I've been collecting some, and they're, like, gorgeous, you know, like, they're so beautiful. And, like, I think also part of that was the stuff that I saw from Kirby before were, like, reprints. And they would reprint it on fancy, shiny paper with, like, right. you know, new inks, new colors and stuff. Yeah. And what you notice is that that yellowing paper, that, like, all that stuff is what makes the Kirby art so amazing. Like, when you look at it now in just, like, the old, like, you know, the original print, it's, like, mind-blowing, you know?
It's just, like, that yellow newsprint, like, the reason why I've embraced that aesthetic, it's incredibly flattering. Yeah. Like, it makes everybody look good. And that whole, like, every artist who, like, worked in that medium and had their work reproduced in that way, when everything switched over, they, like, the comparison was terrible. Like, they all looked bad in comparison to, like, the way they were being colored, like, a year or two prior. And really, like, the only people whose work looks really good in this new format are the people who came into comics after that and, like, figured out what to do with that aesthetic, or you know, in like the rare cases, somebody who figured out how to adapt. But it's totally different. And just, like, talking about, like, G.I. Jones, the thing that I'd say to look at is, like, take your, like, old newsprint copy of that silent interlude G.I. Joe comic and then put it next to, like, all the reprinted versions, like you know, the current version and like the version that, if you bought, like, a Snake Eyes character that got packaged with a comic book or something, like, compare it to those, and it's like night and day. Like, the one on the newsprint is, like, this beautiful atmospheric comic that takes place at night and has all kinds of, like, shadows and fog, and then the glossy version takes place at noon and no atmosphere. It's just, like, two different experiences, and it's kind of like comics that superhero comics, like, lost their soul when they went over to the glossy paper.
Yeah, I mean, I was just looking at that. Like, I have a 25th anniversary edition of the Silent Interlude, and I just recently got the original one, just recently. And I was looking at it, and you're completely right. It's like, it's mind-blowing how, just amazing the aesthetics are back in the, you know, and, like, that ink with the little dots and just all that stuff, and, like, the misregistrations of the color. Mm-hmm. It all just adds to, like,
off focus.
It's so beautiful. Yeah.
So you try to capture a lot of that feeling in this book, like, in the art that you do for this book, like, with the yellow and kind of grayish yellow paper. Like, it's so amazing when you look at, like, you guys were talking about the like a reprint of an old comic, and the white in the gutters is so bright,
yeah,
just overpowering. So I really noticed that with your art in this book, like how the pages, you know, really hang together very well and are so beautiful. I'm kind of curious how you arrived at drawing Kirby, how you did, because you draw him in this really
kind of like a manga type, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or like a comic strip almost, like a right. almost like Peanuts proportions. Like, he's got a pretty big head and big eyes.
He's always adorable.
Yeah, well, it's great, but I'm curious how you got there.
Yeah,
I mean, it was like I arrived there organically. Like, it was something that, like, occurred to me as I was working on this project, because I did, like, there was a version of it, like, not I didn't draw the entire book, but I'd drawn, like, some sequences with, yeah, like a pretty standard, you know, Jack Kirby, you know, relatively realistic, you know, as realistic as sort of that kind of, you know, comic book style can be. And it just, like, it just didn't, like, it was, it just felt like it was missing something. Like, he kind of almost, like, faded into the background a little bit. And I was drawing, like, young Kirby, like, a child Kirby. And, like, you know, I gave him sort of, like, you know, cartoony, you know, child, you know, baby, you know, proportion, that kind of thing. And like, I felt a real connection to that character. And it was like, you know, when he grows up and kind of like loses that, it just like I missed that kid, you know, like I missed that Kirby. And so I, you know, kind of just like this was like a way to kind of keep that Kirby alive. And it ended up like working, you know, in a bunch of different ways that like I hadn't quite anticipated, but, you know, largely it was just like, you know, just like finding a way to like make like you as a reader and me as a reader, like as I'm sort of, you know, reading this thing and seeing like how it works, to just kind of like pull you into the story more, make you identify with him more, make you like see the world through his eyes. And, you know, and just that whole approach. And like, yeah, like, it, you know, it's pretty famously adopted in manga. And then, you know, Tezuka, you know, got it from like Walt Disney and stuff. So it's like this really, you know, and yeah, like Peanuts, like it's just sort of like cartoon language that like for whatever reason, like we as a species just really connect with it. You know, like it felt like it was the way to go. And I'll probably like, I thought it was a really good fit for this project, but I'll probably employ it in like some future projects too. Like, I think there really is like gold there. I think there's a reason why, like, you know, like manga is sort of like the global, it's like manga is like the comics that the world has embraced, where, you know, sort of like that, sort of like superhero idiom or whatever, that like that adventure strip style of drawing is like regional. Like it's really like, it's like America and the UK, like it's
kind of universal, right?
It worked in so many different ways. Like I thought, like, I mean, I think it really emphasizes like the childlike personality that Kirby has, not just in his like imagination, but in how he deals with some of the less savory aspects of the business that he's in, like the adult world, and how dependent he is on Roz. And also, I think it was a great device for putting some distance between him and some of the other people that he interacts with.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's exactly what it does. It makes you like the one character who's drawn that way. It's like, okay, that's the guy, you know, that's who, and then everything else is like the sensual world that this character, you know, inhabits and, you know, walks in. I'd learned that whole way of like talking about it and thinking about it from Scott McCloud. Like he called it like the masking effect, and it just felt like a really good fit. And I had been reading there was like a Tezuka biographical manga, and so like I had been reading, you know, just prior to and while I was working on this, so that had to like kind of, you know, prime the pump a little, like that. I think that definitely had its role to play. Like I saw how, you know, how well that worked there, and it just seemed like a really good way of, you know, pulling your focus.
That Tezuka book is pretty recent, right?
Yeah.
So how fast did you draw this?
I mean, I spent like 3 years like drawing it, I think. So.
Okay.
What was behind your choice not to ink it? Or do you normally ink your stuff? I love the look, but like, you know, I think it looks really great, especially when you contrast the pencils that he's drawing. I think it like works really well. Just wanted to see what you're thinking of when you decided like, hey, I'm just gonna do really dark pencils and some shading here.
Well, I mean, like Kirby, like he spent his life in pencil. Like, you know, that was his medium of choice. And, you know, he occasionally, like very, very occasionally inked things, but really like this was what his work was. and he didn't spend a ton of time, like, you know, reading his own comic books or anything. So, like, as far as he knew, this is what his work was like, you know, a work in pencil. So it just, you know, and that, so, like, I mean, it's like a perfect fit for this project, but I had been, like, starting in that direction, like, even before this book. And it was exactly that. It was like seeing Kirby and seeing, like, how much depth and richness and life there was to his pencils. And then even like his greatest inkers, there was still like some degree of interpretation. And it wasn't just those inkers' individual like personalities and quirks. It was also just like the medium of ink. And that, like, I mean, the first time I saw a Jack Kirby pencil drawing, like a reproduction, like in a book, it blew my mind because like I'd never seen any comic that looked like that. And then you'd get this long explanation, you know, back then in like the 90s of like, oh, well, here's why you can't, like, here's why it needs to be ink because the technology is such that can't blah, blah, blah. But now it can, like all those things, it could, and you can just take the pencil and apply color to it. And when I started doing that to my own work, it just had this richness. And, you know, I would ink things and then color them. And they would just, they'd look too clean. They didn't look right to me. And so then I'd find ways to like scuff them up and you know, get a razor out and things like that. And I realized like, well, with a pencil, it like automatically scuffs itself up. It's like a tiny airbrush or something.
Yeah.
Like you get a crisp line, but it also like cracks and spits and does all this like amazing little, like I just fell in love with the pencil. And so it was just like, It was like a trajectory I was already on, but then mm-hmm. like when I came to this project, it's like it was like a perfect fit. It was like all that exploration was sort of meant for this.
Did you do it on Bristol or did you do it on like a toothier, you know, because it was pencil?
Yeah, I did it on Bristol. Yeah, it was on Bristol. You get enough of a
mm-hmm.
like even on the like the like that like smooth finish.
Scratchy thing. Yeah. Tom, tell me like how, like we never really talked about how you decided to make a book about, I mean, Jack Kirby. How did this all came about and like who did, you know, who did you approach or who approached you to like come up with
this? I mean, it's like, it was sort of like this thing I'd always wanted to read, but it didn't exist. You know, I always wanted to read like a biography by Kirby. I always wondered, oh, did he ever do, you know, like an autobio kind of thing? And it's like, he did like one short autobio thing. And so it was like one of those things, like you sort of, that's kind of where like ideas come from. You think, oh, I'd really like to see this. Mm-hmm. And then it does this. So then you do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something I kind of like was toying with. And then his like 100th birthday was coming up. And it was like, well, I really blew it. Like, if I was going to do that Kirby thing, I should have had it in time for his 100th birthday. But then, well, I can't do anything about that. So let me just, so I started it like pretty shortly before like I just got into production. I just like started, you know, I did like a couple test things and then just started like really like rolling with it and just like posting it on Instagram and Twitter and stuff around then. And then kind of, you know, shopped it around to a couple different places and got like an agent and then got like the book deal with Top Shelf. No, not Top Shelf. Why did I say Top Shelf? 10 Speed.
They're both TS.
Yeah,
TS. I was curious because I am curious about 10 Speed Press. Are they in the Bay Area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe they are. Yeah, they've been in the 70s, I think.
Yeah, but have they ever done comics?
They have. They've been doing comics for like, you know, I don't know, like maybe 5 years. I don't know, maybe 10 years. Like just the way time's been going by. But they've been doing comics for a while, and you know, like they did like a history of video games, like a history of wrestling. Mm. So they had been, you know, expanding into like graphic novels and stuff. And now like they do a lot of them. So yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, the production of the book is amazing,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Not something that you normally would get. Like, it's like, it's got that awesome, like, spot gloss mm-hmm. on the cover and stuff like that. And I was like, ooh, who made this? And I was like, 10 Speed. I've never, mm-hmm. you know, heard about them doing comics, but it's a gorgeous looking book.
Mm. I mean, you know, ironically, like one of the projects they did was like how to make comics the Stan Lee way. I think like they did like
That's funny.
They tell both sides there.
But yeah, exactly.
Tom, tell me about the research that went into this book. Was it mostly your experience with like diving into the comics, or you know, and talking with your buddies in Pittsburgh about it, or what else?
Yeah, I mean, it's like it was just like years and years of being super curious about Jack Kirby as a fan and as like an aspiring creator, and then as a creator, like it's just been this like ongoing project of just like learning everything I could possibly learn about Kirby. Mm-hmm. And then like applying it, you know, like actually something where like, you know, you finally find like an outlet for this like weird, like geeky obsession that you have. And then it becomes a job. Then it becomes like, okay, now I have to verify and really you know, go deep into it, but I had this like you know, structure in place, like this like sort of mental framework, you know, where it's like I had a sense of like, you know, the trajectory of his life. So it's just a matter of like getting like really detailed about like, okay, what comes first, what affects what, okay, was this person really there for that, or are these two stories getting combined, or you know, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
Did you, like, in the whole process of, like, all of the research and then producing the book, did it, like, how did it change your, like, how you feel about Kirby?
Well, I mean, like, I liked him a lot before. Like, I was, you know, largely attracted to, like, the work itself, you know, and then I, like, learned about like the person behind it, and like surprise he was a pretty great person. Like he didn't turn out to be like a scumbag or like, you know, anything, you know, like and that, you know, I came out finishing this book, you know, still feeling that same way. I mean, the difference is like when I finished the book, I was like so tired. Like I was so physically exhausted from like, you know, cataloging, just like listing the creations that he came up with in his lifetime. So it just really made me appreciate the, like the stamina that he had, that like he had to create all this stuff, and he didn't just have to spend like a page or a panel or whatever discussing it. He would have to do like an entire comic, and then like an entire series, and then, you know, 8 years, where, you know, like, so like, I don't know how he did it. Like it's just like, I don't know, something about that generation, or like growing up, you know, in poverty and going to war or something. Like, I don't know what it is that drives that engine, but I was just like in awe of the energy that it takes. And like, people would talk about like Jack Kirby's like appetite, like he just like, you know, consume food and like, you know, big fat hamburgers and chocolate. And like, I get it really was exercise, like him at a drawing, and he wasn't after his sort of like youth, he wasn't a very physically active person. So he really was like burning all these calories with like brain power and wrist action.
Yeah.
I need to follow that regimen.
It doesn't work for everyone.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I love the last part where you talk about all the things that he has created and how, mm-hmm. you know, like how much Hollywood and all these people have been starting making so much money out of his creations, and you're just in awe. Like he did Black Panther, and he did like, you know. Yeah. Thundar and all that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. it's like really to me, like kind of like real amazing, that much imagination comes out of one person, you know what I mean? Like you're lucky in a lifetime to come up with a Black Panther, but then to come up with all, you know, that's crazy.
Captain America, yeah.
yeah, it's like you could sort of stop his story at certain points, and like that would be more than enough.
And it's kind of interesting too. It was to me like how it seemed like almost all of the things he was creating were not, it wasn't under ideal conditions. It was always like, we need you to do something like this for this company, or we need you to fill in this slot here. What can you do for us, Jack? And it, like, I kind of like, did he, what work of his do you think was, I don't know, the most creative, like purely creative, where it was like he had a chance to do whatever he wanted and this is what he did?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's like a lot of answers to that question, because it is a question of like these guys who like establish themselves in like a commercial medium. It is kind of like, okay, like what's you, like what, like how much of it is just like, oh, here's your assignment and you're fulfilling this, like, you know, you're solving this interesting puzzle. Like, what do you care about, Jack Kirby? What are you into? And when somebody asked him, you know, pretty late in life, like, oh, could you do a, you always tell those like great stories about when you were a kid, could you do a comic about that? And he was like, what? You know, like, who cares about that? That nobody would care about that. And then he did it. And it's like this great comic, Street Code, about like the kind of like gang fights you get in. Like he talks about like he was, you know, he wasn't like a comics fan. Like he was a fan of the pulps and like the fiction pulps. That's the stuff he kind of grew up, like hit him at the right age. And then that's the stuff that he obsessively collected, like a comic collector collects. Love the sci-fi stuff. And if you like read his work, like he would tell you, oh, it doesn't matter. I can work on anything. I could work on a Western. I could work on war. I could work on superhero. I could work on whatever. And it's all the same to me. You know, I can do anything. But like his sci-fi stuff always seemed to have like a little something extra. And you can kind of tell like that's his favorite. That's his darling. That's his, what he'd be working on, like if he had his druthers, like, but then there, you know, there was art that he did purely like in his spare time that wasn't a job. And those were like, you know, drawings like from the Bible and collage work and like weird color things and, you know, a lot of sci-fi. Like sci-fi always seemed to like creep in, like no matter what, he would do like Bible stories with, you know, sci-fi angels and things like that. So, you know, all those different things kind of give you a clue of, you know, what his thing was, but, you know, he never like sort of directly stated like, okay, what I really want to do is this, you know, which a lot of artists have said, oh, what I really wanted to do was this, but my career, you know, took me here.
What was your decision to write it in the way that you did, where you're writing in Jack Kirby's voice, as if it's an autobiographical novel, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You referenced that, like your desire to read a Jack Kirby autobiographical novel, and it never happened. So I kind of wonder if that's the reason, but I want you, you know.
I mean, it's like a continuation of that like wish fulfillment, of that desire to like read Jack Kirby's story, like you know, from him. And the thing of like, you'd always hear these stories about, you know, people would just like knock on his door. They'd like look his name up in the phone book, knock on the door and be invited in. And then he'd tell them war stories and tell them, you know, stories about, you know, comics industry and his childhood and stuff. And so like, it was kind of like that, like, you know, like I wanted to like, you know, hang out with Jack Kirby for an afternoon and like have him like, you know, tell me the story. And I imagine other people would want that experience too. So I kind of, you know, framed it that way. Again, it was a creative decision. Like I could have told the book a different way, but that just, you know, same thing with like all the stylistic choices and things. You know, there's a million ways you could do this. It's just like, these were like the ones that made sense to me.
When you were writing it, did you, because when I was reading it, I honestly kind of felt like, I don't know what Jack Kirby really actually sounds like, but I kind of made a voice for him in my head, you know, as I was reading it, especially, you know, like one of my favorite parts are just like the little quick snippets of like weird gang fights, you know, where like they would fight and then they would pick them up and then take them back home or something like that, you know. And it was just such a, it's just, these stories are just, like, they're like so wholesome, but also kind of like a weird world where like, it's fighting, you know. And but when I read it, I try to, it sounds like it's in his voice, which is magical to me, because a lot of that is like your writing as well, you know. It really does sound like it's from a guy like Jack Kirby is talking like this, you know, like in these like weird short snippets, like, yeah, and then we fought, and then with this, you know, it's like really neat. But like when you were writing it, did you like kind of get in his head? Were you like writing in his voice? You know, like how did you get it so that it you would think it sounds like him too, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like it was like trying to get into character and trying to like, you know, embody, you know, like his voice and things. And there was like a lot of kind of like decisions and lines to walk too, because like I tried to capture like the essence of his voice. But like if you get too close, like the Jack Kirby has like a very idiosyncratic way of talking.
Mm.
And it carries through in his writing too. His writing's very idiosyncratic. And I like if I did it spot on, it would be really hard to follow. Like you know, like it would be hard to understand. So like I kind of had to like make like a, you know, it's like it's Jack Kirby, but it's like Jack Kirby if he could talk about his work in the same way that like, you know, Gil Kane or Alex Toth does. I had to like, you know, try to keep his voice, but also have him you know speak in a way that like we could understand, because he did have a very cryptic way of speaking. And I tried to maintain as much of that as I could, but I kind of, you know, had it was like a balancing act, and it feels right. Occasionally I would drop in some you know, like actual Kirby quotes, and you know, those are like, you know, probably the ones that are like a little, you know, the most you know, sort of like left of center.
The drawings, the Kirby drawings that you have in here, you know, the pencils and stuff like that, did you recreate like Kirby drawings, or did you just use his drawings and like kind of Photoshop them in? Because they're amazing.
It was all me. Like that was
wow. Really?
That was me doing my Jack Kirby impersonation. Like that's the one skill I did develop very very early on, was like imitating Jack Kirby. And it's kind of something I don't use as much anymore, like sort of as I found my own voice. But then again, this is like the perfect project to employ it. And so
good. I thought they were all just pages that you Photoshopped in, because I was that's so good.
That's me just doing my Jack Kirby thing.
And you would look at like originals and just kind of like, and then like did your own version of it?
Yeah, and then sometimes I'd even, like sometimes like originals don't exist, so I'd kind of, you know, reverse engineer what I thought like the Jack Kirby drawing would have looked like. And again, the same sort of adjustments I made to his dialogue, I would kind of make to the drawings too, just again, to make them like a little more clear, where if I'd done them exactly, they'd be like too small, like, you know, they'd be, so I'd kind of blow him up, like he'd kind of draw like a little larger on the page in my comic than he would in real life, but just so that you as the reader can see what's on his drawing board.
Like, just look at this page, mm-hmm. where it's just all his drawings. Like, that's crazy.
Wow.
That's amazing. Yeah, those pages were really fun, because it became this like interesting effect of like, you have this sort of full color world he's in, and then that like black and white pencil drawing world kind of creeps in more. And then you have those moments where it's like just all pencil and hand and like a hand and like a yellow number two pencil.
Oh. So amazing.
I have this image of there being like this community of hardcore Kirbyologists out there who like know everything about him and have very strong opinions on controversial like issues. Is that accurate, or is that?
Oh yeah.
Are those people nice to you? Like, do they have you been getting good feedback?
Have I been getting good feedback? Yeah, I mean, I've been getting good feedback from like Kirby experts or whatever. I'm still waiting for like the big like bag of sand to like drop on me from some, you know, Kirby expert saying, no, this, you got this part wrong or you got that, because it is what you described. There is a community of really like diehard Kirby scholars who know everything there is to know about Kirby. And like, I would have been one of them. If somebody else made this book, I'd be, And like, I'd probably be too classy to like air my grievances in public. But if like, you know, if I met you or whatever, I'd be able to tell you, oh, did you read that Kirby book? Oh, he got this wrong and that. But yeah, no, I haven't. And then the other thing is like, the super Stan Lee fans kind of like, wait, like I haven't gotten the, I think maybe cause like comic conventions are like on hold and stuff. Like it would be interesting to see like, you know, what word on the street was, you know, at like a comic convention or something. But no, I mean, so far it's all been glowing, but I am braced and ready for, you know, somebody to get their sort of like slide rule out and, you know, say like, oh, you missed this here. And again, like, you know, Kirby's life is a huge story. So, you know, I had to leave things out, and I'm sure there's somebody, some, you know, Kirby, acolyte out there whose like favorite thing didn't make it into the, but I did my best. I feel like I gave a lot of time to like some things that like when someone's doing an overview of Kirby's life they kind of leave out, so you know.
I think when you're a fan, even if you miss things and you interpret things with, you know, the heart that you have in this book, I it's hard to argue, you know what I mean? Like, if it was like someone just got paid to do this book and missed things, if I was a Kirby, you know, fan, I would be like, no, you missed this. But I mean, you can just feel that, like, you have the love and respect for this person, this subject matter. So I don't see that much coming. I mean, I guess there are jerks out there, but you know.
Yeah. And you know, jerks are going to be jerks.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm a huge fan of all kinds of things. And like, I have my like fan side where like I'll get very you know, angry over like very minute, like stupid things. So like I totally get it if somebody, you know, felt that way, you know, about this.
Well, I would think that, you know, the your colleagues and like Ed Pitzker and Jim Rugg probably have, I don't know if you've talked to them about or got some feedback on while you were writing the book, if they had any conversations with them, because I know they're, you know, very they have a huge opinions about comics and
they have like scholarly knowledge.
Yes,
right. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to speak for them or anything, but like they were huge supporters of this book all along, like from the very beginning. And I did, like, you know, they are like two of like a very small number of people that I kind of like share my work with when it's in progress, and they've been like 100% behind this. And even when I was when this was like one of many projects that I was considering working on, they were like, no, that Kirby book, that's the book. That's the book you got to do. Like, they were insistent. And I feel like, it is the thing that's sort of most up their alley of like everything I've done, because like those guys, like probably even more so than me, like those guys are huge fans of like the inside baseball of comics, mm-hmm. of like what this guy did and what that guy did. So this is like they're, you know, I think like kind of the perfect audience for this book.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to ask you about that because, you know, I'm always curious about communities of cartoonists. You know, that's one of my favorite things. You know, like, obviously, like, we're in the Bay Area. We have some close-knit communities as well. And, you know, you, Ed, and Jim, I always kind of think of as a kind of a crew. But it's like crazy to me that there were like three people in the same kind of area that found each other, that became friends, that like had this like crazy encyclopedic knowledge of comics. That like, I was like, how does three people like this exist in the world to begin with? And how did they just happen to be in the same place? And yeah.
Magical.
Yeah, yeah. Say, can you tell a little bit about like how you guys like, you know, kind of like formed and like.
Yeah, I mean, is there something about the place?
Yeah.
I have wondered, like, is it a Pittsburgh thing? Like, is it, I'm probably too close to it to have any kind of perspective on it. I don't know. I mean, just like, you know, the way we met, it's just like, I don't know, like back then, it was like either the late 90s or early 2000s or something. And like comics just felt like a smaller world back then. And particularly like comics in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. you know, very small, like just like the Pittsburgh comics community has exploded since then. It's like massive. Like I don't know like hardly anybody in that, you know, it's this, and every now and then I'll find out like, oh, this person's from Pittsburgh. I didn't know that, you know? But yeah, we just kind of like, I think like Jim was very proactive about building like a comics community at that time. He was kind of the one sort of, you know, like it wasn't me. Like I was in my own world doing my thing, like not, you know, like too busy to think about anything but making comics. And so it was kind of like, yeah, Jim and Ed, you know, just kind of like approached me at like conventions and stuff. And then I think it was Jim like kind of put together this like, you know, weekly or every other week, like get together where we'd like go to the comic shop and then go to the coffee shop across the street and just like hang out and talk and whatever. And it just kind of like, it went from there.
That's funny. That's like basically what their podcast is about.
That seems like the model too, right? Like that's like Dan Clowes and Adrian Tomina and Richard Sala. Like they would go to Comic Relief in Berkeley and then they would go to a coffee shop or whatever every
yeah.
week.
Yeah. That whole thing kind of continued into like car trips to conventions. And we'd just be like sitting in the car with like, you know, 9 hours to kill, 4 hours to kill, and just like get these like, you know, crazy conversations going. And then by the end of the weekend, we'd kind of like have our marching orders of like, okay, this is like the next step of comics, you know, is like this, you know, weird like brain trust that we'd had in this like very like this like bubble, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome. Is that how the Fantastic Four grand design came about? Because Ed had just done the X-Men grand design, which was awesome. But when they did the Fantastic Four grand design, and they said, and I read that it was you who were doing it, I was like, oh, of course, you know. So like, is that was there any relation to the two projects?
Yeah, I mean, when Ed was working on that X-Men grand design, and then like Marvel was talking to him about like, you know, like follow-ups or what, like expanding it or whatever, and like, and he told me, he's like, I didn't say anything, like they mentioned your name, like I didn't say, oh, why don't you give it to them? Like he's like your name was like the first name that came from it. so either like they're seeing like an aesthetic and I don't know, spiritual similarity or something. Or maybe they're aware of the larger story. Maybe they're aware of like, oh yeah, these guys all hang out together or whatever. But like, yeah, like it came there. So like, you know, unless he's like trying to spare my feelings or something, and he's like telling them like, oh, you got to give my friend Tom a job.
Yeah. It's great. I love those projects. Do you sometimes wish that these comics, like the Fantastic Four grand design, could actually be printed on newsprint?
Well, the book is, it's not printed on newsprint, but it's printed on like a very toothy.
Oh wow!
Stock. So like to me, it's as good or better than newsprint. Like it turned out exactly the way I wanted it to turn out. Like it was perfect. Like it really looks like, and especially like the larger Treasury version. It looks like that old thing, and it, you know, it feels right. It's like a little more durable. Like it's not going to tear like the newsprint, but it's got like exactly the look. And that was like a first for me. I mean, not quite, American Barbarian also had that too, but then like the G.I. Joe Transformers stuff and the GoBots were done on like glossy paper, but then I'd apply all those textural things to it, but it was still glossy paper. But this was like, yeah, that like perfect finish. And then the Jack Kirby book, it was like, you know, very similar kind of yeah. stock. And yeah, just like that's exactly what I would want.
I love when a book is produced the way that you intended it to. That's quite cool.
So I was just going to bring up your Instagram, which I follow, and you've been posting these little superhero comic strips that are very playful and humorous, and it seems like you're kind of experimenting a lot with different digital art techniques and stuff like that. Is that a hint of what's coming, what you're working on, or is this just a palette cleanser? Or what are those strips about?
Yeah, it's all of that. Like, this, I had finished this Jack Kirby project, you know, huge project, a lot of time, a lot of energy, and in a lot of ways, like a culmination of a lot of, you know, things I'd been working on up to that point. Sure. And so it was just kind of like, okay, what's next? Like, what do I do next? And I was just playing. Like, I'm just kind of like, and this is how a lot of my projects develop, is just kind of like, I don't know, I'm just going to play and see what happens. So there are experiments. Maybe there are experiments that won't become something, or maybe the things that I try, I can apply to something else, or maybe these things themselves will become something. But it was like, I did feel like after the Jack Kirby thing of like, okay, I got to do something. I got to do something important. And like, that's a real creativity killer. Mm-hmm. Like when you go, oh, I gotta make a big statement. I gotta like save the world with my comics, and that kind of nothing good come of that. So it was like, just like, let me just have some fun. Let me play around and you know, just play with like superheroes and just kind of like fun stuff and you know, whatever, and see what happens. And you know, that's kind of where I'm at. It's like, I keep hoping for it to like gel into something and become like the next big thing. But yeah, still just playing around and, you know, see where it goes.
It's fun.
Yeah. Also, like, I had a lot of sort of like baggage I had to get past. Like I did a bunch of those superheroes and things were like characters. Cause like I'd done all these, like, you know, like G.I. Joe, Transformers, Fantastic Four, like all these corporate things. And like, those characters kind of had like some weight and meant something to me because, you know, they were things that I was like into from an early age. So there's all that nostalgia wrapped up. And then they also had like their own histories and stories. So there was like something to build on. It wasn't like starting from scratch. And just like looking through like some old notebooks and things from when I was a kid, I found like, you know, all these characters that I created when I was a kid, and like that kind of stuff had like a similar, it like kind of hit similar, you know, sweet spots and like similar like nostalgia, and they felt like they had their own history too. So that just seemed like an interesting thing to build on. So like I started doing that. And then I also had like a bunch of scripts that I'd created for like this book I was doing for DC called Superpowers, and then like that thing ended, and I have like years worth of material and like that I'm really proud of, and like nothing to do with it. So like some of those stories are like me like repurposing those super, because again, it's like, you know, it's kind of hard to like move past that, like when you like put a bunch of work into something and you're really proud of it and it's just never going to see the light of day. So it's like working through a lot of things, and like comics, you know, and just like the world is kind of on hold at the moment. I mean, some people say, oh no, it's not, you know, things are still going on or whatever, but like, that's just kind of how it feels to me. So it's like, it's really hard to like make that like big next move at a time when like, you don't really know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, so for me, I, you know, your this book and just your career in general is very inspiring to and I think that's gonna be very, because I just feel like there's not very many people that have done it kind of like their way and have kind of taken this path to, you know, to the point where I'm not really even quite sure that you're at this point yet, but I what I envision is that it seems like you're able to kind of work on projects that you love now, you know, and like get paid for it. And I think that's like the dream, but you did it like kind of your way. And I think that's super inspiring. And I'm like, I'm very happy that we got a chance to chat.
Yeah.
Rita, did you want to ask any Pittsburgh questions before we?
No, I always feel like that's a token question I have to ask, but I do get excited. And when we were talking about Ed and Jim, I do remember going back, because when I started doing comics again, I moved to the Bay Area and I found community there. But when I came back to visit, I think for a show, I think it was Pittsburgh Independent or Indie. Yeah, it was an indie comic show. And just seeing all of these comic artists, cartoonists all in one place, but like different types of cartoonists, like, you know, the political comic strip cartoonists, you know, gag cartoonists and, you know, newspaper cartoonists and people just starting out and you guys and Bill Boykel, you know, from Copacetic Comics shop and Frank Santora, like they all were just very, there were like no factions. Like it was just this wonderful, beautiful community that everyone was totally, whatever type of cartoonist or whatever level or whatever skill set, just very, very welcoming. And that was like the one, and also Rachel, I forgot, just everyone knew each other and everyone was so welcoming and that just blew me away. And so that's what I always think of, you know, Pittsburgh cartoonists. I mean, Tom still knows me from like the last, we haven't seen each other for a while, so he remembers me. So just seeing that. And then like going, I think they going to like monthly like lunches or like getting hot dogs together, like that, like that's amazing. Like Wayno, you know, who does, you know, the Bizarro strips, like it's great. And I'm just glad that there's a great comics community there. It almost makes me want to go back and live there. And but I'm afraid of winters and extreme weather. But yeah,
you can't have her back.
Yeah. I wondered like you know you.
Rita, don't leave.
Like someplace cool, like someplace, you know, hip, and someplace like something's happening.
I left. Like, exactly. I left. Area. I left, and then it got cool, and I was like, "Is it because I left?" Like, I think it's
left the Bay Area, and then it gets cool.
Yeah, but I'm really excited. I'm excited about the whole comic scene in Pittsburgh. I'm excited about you guys. You know, kind of revolutionizing how we see. How it's cool now to like see like these old comics and like, you know, bringing them into, you know, the modern age and also making them your own and telling your stories through them. I think it's really cool. So very, very happy to have you on.
Yeah, awesome.
Finally.
Tom, before we go, what's next for you? What is there anything coming out publishing wise or?
Tell us your Instagram first.
My Instagram is Tom_Scioli, and then my Twitter is @TomScioli. That's basically like where I'm at right now. Like I didn't have a plan beyond this book. And then I couldn't even imagine a world after this book. And then I finished it and I needed some time off. Like I was exhausted. And I took some time off, and then like the whole world took some time off. So,
so perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, you deserve it though. Like, I'm sure you have plenty left in you, but this is definitely like one of those like kind of works of a lifetime, I would say. Like, it does feel like monumental like that.
Yeah, and I hope that you know the world taking a break doesn't stop people from picking this up, because I think this is amazing. The comic book store I got this at had like a whole pile of them, and we were buying them. So I was like, oh, okay. I'm glad that people are starting to pick it up and comic stores are supporting it and stuff. So
yeah, I mean, I think, you know, everybody's, you know, stuck at home and, you know, like reading is kind of having, you know, like a renaissance.
Yes. It's true. Well, it was nice to see you, Tom. Thank you so much for doing this show. Hopefully we'll keep in touch. And
hopefully we'll be at like a convention together.
Yeah. Someday, yeah.
All right. Thanks, Tom.